Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Actually having a lot of great conversations today about hierarchy. Lots of people want to talk about the hierarchy of the church, the hierarchical nature of the church. Did Jesus really intend to have all this Catholic, a layer cake of hierarchy? Or did he? Darren gave me the nod. He said, yes, layer. That was a good analogy that I came up. Thank you, Darren. Or did Jesus just want a more of a simple, cool?
I like that you're immediately going into hippie Jesus mode. I hear you say it. Yeah,
man. Or something in between. You're welcome to call with your questions about the hierarchy, about Jesus's intentions and how he made those clear to us about what he wanted in his church, the church that he himself builds. 888-318-7884 is the number to call. 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer has written a whole bunch of great books. The three I have on my desk right now, all related to this topic in one way or another. The Eucharist is Really Jesus. Pope Peter, Defending the Church's Most Distinctive Doctrine in a Time of Crisis. The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Welcome back, Joe. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Are you as impressed as I am with that the phones have stayed so full on this topic? I wasn't sure.
I love the questions. I mean, I think that probably is conveyed by how hard it is for me to go on to the next caller and not just stick with like one caller per show. Yeah. I'm loving the questions, and I'm glad people are having a place to ask.
It is kind of in your wheelhouse. Like, you love those first two centuries of the church. And so if you're going to talk about what did Jesus intend, you got to look at, well, what did the apostles do? What did those people who knew the apostles do? And, all right, 888-318-7884, the number. Let's go to, I don't think I'm going to do the joke. I don't know. Should I don't know. Somebody sent us another pun joke, and I'm not completely comfortable with it.
I think that's exciting not to do. I mean, although if I had that level of discipline about my own jokes, I'd probably be doing a lot better in my life.
Well, I don't want to be prudish, but I'm going to go to Martha in Rapid City, South Dakota. All right. Is Rapid City named aptly? It doesn't feel rapid when you're there, but I think it might refer to the river. Hi, Martha.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Really good. Thank you for calling.
Good. How are you? You've answered the question without answering it, Martha.
Oh, I have? Oh.
Yeah.
Really? Really? Oh, okay. So.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What was your question?
Okay, my question?
No, yes, please, okay. Please.
My question is about canon priests and why we don't have them. I kind of know, possibly, but why we don't have them anymore, and is it possible to have them again?
And so do you want to explain what canon priests are for those who don't know?
Yes. Explain them a little bit, and then if there are any in the world where they're at.
Okay. I'll explain. So originally canons came from the rector or the priest who served at the cathedral and would serve in this kind of a special role on the bishop's behalf. The bishop isn't always going to be in his own cathedral. And so they had a special role tied to this. Eventually they were formed canon houses. This was pretty common throughout the Middle Ages. And you will still find this in Europe in places. But this, and so also eventually they took the Augustinian, they followed Augustinian spirituality, so they wouldn't have private wealth and everything else. So they were just really at the service of the bishop in a special way. There are still a lot of honorary things tied to canons. I believe the president of France is an honorary canon of St. John's, which is kind of a weird phenomenon that just, it gives you a sense of how old this was. back to the days of kings. The canons were often responsible for things like choosing who the next bishop would be in their diocese, or at least proposing a bishop. The Pope didn't have to accept it, but they had a particular role, because you would have not just one canon, you'd have, you know, several canons, and so they'd be called the canons regular, who were following the regula, the rule of St. Augustine. This diminishes kind of... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, when you said that, just
open
my mind to possibilities. So go ahead, continue.
Okay. I believe that this declines more or less after the Council of Trent, or with the Council of Trent. There's more of a push for what we normally know as kind of diocesan life. There's no reason in principle you couldn't have canons or something like it. And there are various religious groups that use the title canon to describe their members as well. But it's true that they're not nearly as common as they used to be, particularly here.
Okay.
All right.
So I think, is this still something that we could have then? There's still something we could have in the United States?
Yeah, I don't see any reason that we couldn't. Like I said, they were very popular, like the 12th century. I believe that there are still Augustinian canons in the U.S., but I don't think that there are many.
Martha, I'll tell you what. I'd like to send you Joe's book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. If you'd like it, all you have to do is give us an address, and we will send it off to you. Thank you very much for getting us started for this hour. I've got to keep moving. There is one line open, however, 888-318-7884. John in Abilene, Texas. Thank you for waiting, John. Go ahead with your question.
As far as Moses and his coffee go,
John, I'm sorry. I got to ask you to get right in, talk right into the phone. It's very hard to hear you.
Yes, I highly doubt that Moses brews his own coffee. He probably relied on his staff.
Hey!
Oh, that was so doggone it, John. We're going to have to send you a book. We're going to have to. You forced us to. We're going to have to send you a book. All right.
Well, that was really good.
For Joe, he kind of touched on it earlier about democracy versus hierarchy. Does the church hierarchy, did Jesus give them authority to change the hierarchy? I'm thinking the hierarchy of the church versus the transition to the synodal church, or synodal, however you say it.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have the power to do that?
Okay, let's talk about the general principle and then kind of where it breaks down. So the core structure, sort of the DNA of the church, where from a hierarchical perspective, you've got a bishop, elder, deacons, and those elders become known as priests pretty quickly. That is unchanging. That is part of the nature of the church that we don't have the authority to change. There are variations, and we're looking here at the local church. You know, obviously at the global level, you have the authority of the Pope, but he is another bishop. He's not some fourth tier. But we're looking at the more particular level of the local church. You can also have things that develop that aren't part of the inherent DNA of the church, but are things that the church creates as kind of an organizational help. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned Moses, because if you remember his conversations with his father-in-law, Jethro, he creates a whole series of intermediary structures for handling disputes. God doesn't tell him he has to do that, but Moses is still acting wisely to handle all of the issues that people have, so that he's not personally responsible for every issue that might come up. So the church can and should do things like that, have middle level. I mean, bureaucracy is the negative term for it, but having ways of making the church more direct and accountable and responsible and responsive to the ordinary people. So you've got everything from like the creation of the Roman Curia, where you can work on projects church-wide together, to things like ecclesiastical provinces, where one bishop is named an archbishop and given special authorities and roles. You've got the creation of cardinals, who are honorary priests of Rome and sent with the Pope's authority to different places. All of those things are of human creation. Like, the church could overnight say, we're going to get rid of the College of Cardinals completely and replace it with something else. That's technically possible, because those things are of man-made origin. But the basic structure of bishop, presbyter, deacon couldn't be changed. Now, to the second part of your question about the synodal church, It depends a little bit whether you mean the one that the church refers to or the thing that the Germans call the synodal way. Because the idea of leading and moving forward in a collaborative way is certainly absolutely possible. Like if you as a father said, I'm going to do a better job of listening to my kids, no one is hopefully going to say, oh, so you're usurping your role as father, huh? No, I think they would say, oh, good, you're living out your role as father in a wise way. So if synodal, which was a notoriously undefined term and has been, if by that we just mean collaborative and like the leadership style where we are listening to the laity and the major players and whatever, you know, the course of action is, and then the bishop is exercising his authority to move forward from there, that is certainly not only possible, but the better part of prudence. If synodal way means like we are avoiding, or like getting rid of the what are called the three munera, where there's these three jobs tied to the bishop by divine ordinance, which is to govern, to sanctify, and to what's the third one? Oh, I can't believe I'm
to teach.
Blanking on to teach. Thank you. I am obviously not qualified to do that one.
You were doing great up until that point.
I know. I totally hit a wall. Yeah, these are called the three munera. It's the plural of munus in Latin, like the duties. So a bishop can't just void that. The church can't just void that bishops are called to do that. But there are certainly ways that a bishop could have like teachers in his diocese without voiding his teaching authority. And likewise, he can have people who assist him in performing those duties, but not in a way that replaces them.
Okay. Yes, I understand. So, I mean, if I'm the father, I do have children, and yeah. God did give me authority over them in certain regards. But if I listen to them, I'm not exercising my authority, am I? If
the church I hope you're listening to them.
Children,
I mean, listening to them doesn't mean you
authority over them.
Listening to them doesn't mean you blindly do whatever they tell you, but it does mean that you should be responsive in your style of leadership, that Christian leadership, you know, Luke 22 is a good model for this. The apostles are not called to carry their authority heavily. They're not to be like the Gentiles who, you know, their overlords demand all these special privileges and everything else. They're instead to be like Christ, who comes as one who serves. And so all Christian leadership, from your authority as a father to the bishop's authority to the pope's authority, whatever it is, all leadership should be servant leadership, and therefore it should have this element where we are paying attention to what the people we're trying to serve are saying, so we have a sense for whether we're doing it well or not, and then can respond. Again, it doesn't mean we have to blindly do whatever they tell us. You do have to, you know, the final decision on what to do does fall to you, but it should be collaborative in terms of inviting certainly your wife in, but also even your children in as well, to, you know, conversations, decisions, et cetera.
John, we are going to send you a book. You can have The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Just hang on. Give us an address and we'll send it off to you. Thank you for the joke. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with more. Joe Heschmeyer talking about hierarchy on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at Magnificat.com.
The EWTN Radio Listener Comment Line is open right now for you. If you've got a question or comment about what you hear on EWTN Radio, we'd love to hear it. Call 205-795-5773. We'd also like to know how our programming has impacted your life or the life of someone you know. That number again, 205-795-5773. And thank you for listening to EWTN Radio.
Joe Heschmeyer, our guest on Catholic Answers Live. Your calls welcome, 888-31-TRUTH. We're talking about the hierarchy today. If you have questions about the Catholic hierarchy, if you have questions about whether, or maybe you have concerns in addition to questions about whether or not Jesus intended a hierarchical church like the one we've got, your call is welcome, 888-318-7884. We're going to Las Vegas, Nevada. Colleen in Las Vegas. Thanks for waiting, Colleen.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to.
Okay. My question is, a little background. I was born and raised Catholic, and when I turned 18, I was very happy Catholic, converted to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and spent 43 years fully, fully devoted. I'm finding myself, although I still have great respect and love for that church, but I'm finding myself more involved in the Catholic Church again. The problem I'm having is I do understand the hierarchy, but I completely trusted the hierarchy when I was Catholic, and then when I was Mormon, so completely trusted, that now I'm finding it hard to trust so fully again. And the details, I mean, the Catholic Church now, okay, if it's from the very beginning of Christ, and if it didn't have that great apostasy, as others might think, it's still so much bigger. There's so many peripherals that I find it hard to trust in, let's say, doing pilgrimages and getting indulgences from the pilgrimages, or having trust in saying the rosary and just other things that find it very complicated to trust all of it.
Yeah, that's okay. I like the way you've kind of framed that, and I really appreciate the background you gave, because it makes sense that you'd be feeling that way. You know, if you were someone who'd been in a relationship where you trusted someone and then felt like the trust was betrayed, I would imagine it'd be very hard to enter another relationship and be able to have that same trust again right away. So some of that is just going to be a natural reaction, a natural response. The thing we have to do is keep two things clear. On the one hand, there is a human dimension to the church, and the human members of the church will fall short and they will fail you at times because all of us are imperfect. The divine element of the church, in the sense that it is being led by the Holy Spirit, I think we can see that by standing back and looking at the big picture, that the church has remained remarkably consistent. And the mere fact that the church continues to exist at all is very remarkable. So, you know, if you know, you mentioned having been Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they've had to push the great apostasy to right after the apostles die. Because when you read the writings of the people who knew the apostles, they sound so Catholic that there's no getting around it. And this presents a certain obvious problem. If you read the New Testament, it certainly looks like Christianity is going very well. I mentioned 2 Timothy 2, 1-2 earlier, but I'll quote it again if you don't mind, that we see multiple generations of Christians. So Paul, who's in the first generation, is talking to Timothy, who's in the second generation, and he says, "You then, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus, and what you've heard from me before many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." So you have there a clear sense from the Bible itself that there's at least three generations of faithful men who are going to be capable of teaching. And who are those faithful men going to be teaching? Well, obviously the next generation after them. So the story from the New Testament isn't everything is about to end in a horrible great apostasy. The whole church is going to be completely destroyed. The priesthood and keys are going to go away. And yet that's the story the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has to tell to explain why the people of Timothy's generation don't look and sound Mormon, they look and sound Catholic. And so you can see this for yourself by reading their writings. You, for example, St. Ignatius of Antioch, he mentions Onesimus as the Bishop of Ephesus in his letter to him. Now, this is telling for a few reasons, because Onesimus is it certainly seems quite likely that this is the former slave mentioned in St. Paul's letter to Philemon. And so here you have someone who very much knew the apostle, was freed by the apostle Paul, and then became a bishop. Now, the scholar F.F. Bruce mentions is probably the reason we have the letter to Philemon. Unlike Paul's other letters, which are called circulars or public letters, you're supposed to copy them and pass them on. This letter was a personal letter that was written to Philemon, the man who'd enslaved Onesimus. And so the one person it would make sense would keep it preserve it and then hold it up as an example of divine providence would be Onesimus, who goes on to be the Bishop of Ephesus, where we believe some of the early collections of the New Testament writings occurred. I mention all this to say, we know, and I cover this in my book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, we know that the earliest centuries after the apostles looked extremely Catholic. And we know they continue to today. And so you have this historical issue that here there's been all of these pressures on the church, external pressures to destroy the church, internal pressures to make the church more like the world or to accept some new heresy. And yet we can still recognize the same teaching, the same structure, the same leadership all these years later. And so in the face of that, I would say, hold on to that. Like, recognize that this thing that's unchanging can be trusted. Like, I think it is objectively true to say there is less observable shift in the teaching and governance of the Catholic Church for 2,000 years than there has been within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, even, say, between Joseph Smith and Brigham Young. Like, the number of teachings that changed between Smith and Young, or between Young and today, you can do any number, you know, Adam God, all of these other things that were once taught and are now not taught in the name of progressive revelation. There's a lot of shifting doctrine and a lot of shifting truth, whereas the Catholic Church stands for a truth that is established once for all and doesn't have to change. Does that make sense?
Okay, it does. That's helpful. And I have called in before and spoken to Trent Horn, and he was helpful in ways about the apostasy, and I appreciate guys so much. But I am scheduled to go on the cruise in 2026.
Hey,
Lori, I look forward to being able to have a much longer conversation with you about this.
The gal that has been Mormon for 45 years and Catholic and all the way around. Again,
It's going to be fascinating to hear your story.
Unfortunately,
thank you very much.
Oh, of course. Absolutely, Colleen. I was going to say, it's unfortunately too soon to put a date on this because I don't know, but I've been working with Cameron Bertuzzi of Capturing Christianity and Jacob Hansen, who is a well-respected apologist for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and we're going to be debating at some point in hopefully the nearish future, either in Texas or in Utah, this exact question of the Great Apostasy, maybe as soon as next month. So keep an ear out for that, and especially if it's in, you know, somewhere that's not far from you, you might check it out, or you can always check it out online, I'm sure, as well.
Colleen, have we ever sent you any of Joe's books?
I have contacted Mormon sites that are very, very scholarly and all that, and suggested that there be a debate done with one of you Catholic apologists, so I will look forward to that.
Lori.
But in any case, I'll see you two in couple months.
Okay, Colleen, I was wondering if we've ever sent you one of Joe's books.
Well, I've read the Early Church Was a Catholic Church. I don't know that there's any I haven't read, but you can name off a few, and I'll
Pope Peter.
Pope Peter,
the Eucharist.
That one.
Pope Peter. No, I don't have that.
Well, all right, we'll send that to you. Hang on. I'm just gonna put you on hold.
Okay.
Edgar's gonna pick up the phone. You give us an address in Las Vegas, Nevada, and we will send it to you, Colleen. Looking forward to seeing you in a few months on the Catholic Answers Cruise. If you want to find out about the Catholic Answers Cruise from Amsterdam to Basel, that's up. Is that up the Rhine? Yeah, up the Rhine. Not really down.
They
the
call
Rhine.
It up, but
it's up the Rhine. But you go
confusing.
South, but up the river, and. You can get rowing and non-rowing cabins, whichever you prefer. If you'd prefer to just relax and not row, or if you want a rowing cabin, just go to CatholicCruise.com and find out all about it. We leave Amsterdam on May 2nd of next year, CatholicCruise.com. Up next, we go to Houston, Texas, where Steve is listening on the EWTN app. Glad to have you here, Steve. Thanks for the call.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm glad you took my call. Can I preface
Absolutely.
This by saying that this is not an attack on the magisterium?
Oh, this is going to be good then. With that preface, this is going to be good, Steve. All right, go ahead.
However, I can assure you with regard to the LGBTQ things, and this goes back, Pope Benedict the 16th was attacked by this core of homosexual pushing men in the Curia and in the Episcopate It got worse under the almost open attack on the church by Pope Francis. And now we've got another pope speaking in obliquities, and in some cases opacity. Here's the problem. Jesus Christ would not have behaved with reserve. He would not have had reticence, and he certainly would not have acted in a spirit of timidity with respect to this. He would have been open and clear about it. So, to use canon law speech, it seems to me that the magisterium themselves have laudate sententia, placed themselves out of communion with Christ and Christ's church in refusing to take this on so that they could be milquetoast nice to people. And that is, to use another term, sit anathema.
Steve, I'm happy to answer that when we come back from the break. How about that?
And I apologize if we didn't let you finish your point. I'll let you finish when we come back, and then we'll get to Joe. But I can't stop this break. Right back, Catholic Answers Live.
Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
What is the Catholic Church? Everyone seems to have an opinion, but the church never quite fits into the boxes people make for it. In The Faith Unboxed, author Andrew Petiprin looks at some of the most common boxes people put the Catholic Church in and explains why they don't fit. In doing so, he brings us closer to what the church really is, the institution founded by Christ. Order The Faith Unboxed today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. As I said before, I really didn't know how these hours were going to go with Joe. That's always good to be with Joe, but I didn't know how people would respond to just talking about hierarchy and the idea of hierarchy. It's an Ask Me Anything about hierarchy today. And it has gone better than I could have hoped because the questions have been so good, some of them quite challenging, including from our current caller, who Joe has not been able to address yet because we got interrupted. And I don't know if Steve finished his question, but it has to do with Steve's in Houston, as I was saying, and I don't know if he got to the end of the point, which has to do with the magisterium itself being corrupt and not speaking in a manner that Christ himself would speak, that it was without the clarity and moral authority that Christ himself had. Steve, was there more to your point, or would you like Joe to address what you were saying?
Amen, brother. You said exactly where I'm at. I don't want to go against the magisterium.
Praise
because
God.
I do believe that the Holy Spirit moves within the magisterium. But they are men,
yep.
And I don't know whether it's through arrogance, through money. I don't know what their reason for this is, but they're sowing division in the church and confusion among people who are watching the church.
Joe?
So I want to make sure I understand the nature of it specifically. You're specifically talking about like homosexuality, right? I mean, because there's a number of ways this conversation could go. So I want to make sure that I'm focusing on the issue that is nearest and dearest to your heart, or the thing you're most concerned about, we'll say.
The appearance is that they are embracing these things. And let me tell you something. Having spent, because of things that happened in my childhood, having spent 30 years in that community, I am not speaking out of ignorance. What the church is failing to be firm about has real consequence.
Yeah, I appreciate your yeah. I was going to say, I appreciate your concern on it, because I think it is something where we need moral clarity and strong leadership and good guidance, because this is something where many people, especially young people, can be seduced into a lifestyle that isn't just, you know, sinful. It's morally destructive for them and destructive in so many ways, leads to such a tremendous unhappiness that out of love for them, we want something better. My impression is there are several people within the church who get that, but want to lead with gentleness because they recognize that there's a woundedness among people in this community, and that they have a feeling of persecution and a feeling of not being loved or accepted by the church. And so in that sense, they might be thinking of something like Luke 15, you know, Jesus sits down with tax collectors and sinners. Now we know we're talking here about people who have done things that are sexually immoral. And the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. Like, the allegation was, he's too cozy with these people who've engaged in these sexual deviances or sins of whatever kind. And Jesus explained his approach was different. He wasn't eating with them because he thought that they were making good choices about their life. He was eating with them because he knew they needed to be to receive that sense of being accepted and loved before they'd be ready to change their behavior. Now, he gives three parables in response to this. He gives a parable of the lost sheep. He gives a parable of the lost coin. And then he gives a parable of the lost son, which we know is the prodigal son. Those are important for showing, like, the way to live in this Christ-like way is not simply to proclaim the truth boldly. That is an important part of what a priest does, what a pastor does. But a pastor is, above all else, a shepherd. And so a shepherd goes after his sheep. So I think that you have, among the leadership of the church, shall we say, three camps. You've got those who say, like, put an emphasis on, let us speak this truth very boldly, and because people need to hear the truth. You have people who put the emphasis on, let us accompany and go after the lost sheep and let them feel the love of Christ and how we engage with them. And then, unfortunately, I think you have a third group that doesn't treat it as immoral, doesn't treat it as the sin that it is. It's hard to know how large that group is, but there certainly are people who exist within that, and Benedict was rightly concerned about it, and I think you have plenty of evidence that such people exist. I think it's easy to confuse the second and the third group. I think the second group has good intentions and might be even holy in their approach. And the third group uses that as kind of a mask to advance an agenda that's contrary to Christ. You know, imagine if you had one of the apostles who wanted to have dinner with a sexual sinner for a different reason. That would make it very hard to do the kind of things that Jesus is doing. And that is, unfortunately, I think, the situation we find ourselves in, where I think the people who are loudly denouncing these destructive ideologies and the people putting the emphasis on accompaniment are both trying to do the same thing in opposite ways, of trying to say, how can we help get this person where they want to return to the fold and want to experience the embrace of Christ in this way that's very transformative and redeeming? But I think there's also, I think it would be naive not to say there are also people who might be bad actors in the midst as well. Is that fair to say?
I think you stated it perfectly well, yes, but I don't think that the church has been very clear on it, especially when we see things like what is going on in Germany now, where they want to bless same-sex marriages. They want to make priests groups of openly homosexual men. You know, they're sending a message out to the world, and I realize the need to shepherd people. I am not, I hope, hateful to anyone. I don't dislike any of the people I ever knew. But the message has to be clear that this is behavior that is not good for you. This is behavior that is not edifying. This is behavior that does not lead to salvation.
Yeah, I think helping people to see they have a deeper identity than whatever their sexual attractions happen to be. That's true of all of us. This deeper identity as a son or daughter of God. And, you know, you've got different parts of your identity. They can conflict sometimes. And you should take the more integral part of who you are. So if your job gets in the way of being a husband and father, might be time to quit your job. Well, likewise, if your sexual lifestyle gets in the way of being a disciple of Jesus Christ, to being a son of God, you should change your sexual lifestyle. That, I think, is the emphasis Pope Leo has certainly sounded in the few times he's spoken on this issue so far. He has in the past warned about gender ideology, and he has suggested that one of the errors of it is that it treats sexual orientation as the most important thing about you, and it's not. It's this other thing, your relationship with Christ. I think that is a good message that actually does a good job of taking the best of those first two camps I talked about, of speaking the truth boldly, but also accompanying people so that the truth is received in the way it's meant to be. You know, we're supposed to speak the truth with love. This is a very hard topic to speak the truth on, where people don't feel hurt or alienated just by telling the truth about the way God made us and the designs that he has for us and for our bodies and the path to true and abiding happiness. So I think it's okay to be concerned that the church could be saying or doing more. I don't think this should lead you to a place where you're worried that the magisterium has become, you know, excommunicated from itself. I think it's better to just say, thanks be to God, I'm not the Pope and have to figure out the pastoral way to do this. As for me and my house, here's how we will serve the Lord, and here's how we will present this message in the small corner of the earth God gave me to transform for the gospel.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, my pleasure, brother.
Thank you so much for the call, Steve. I'm going to send you one of Joe's books. I really do appreciate the conversations today, and I want to reward people with one of Joe's books. I'll send you The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Just give us an address when I put you on hold there. They'll pick up in a minute. And give us an address. We'll send The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, Steve. Off to North Carolina, Chelsea in North Carolina. I'm sorry we've kept you waiting so long. We've had a little bit longer conversations than usual today, Chelsea, but thank you for the call.
Yeah, no problem. That's okay. So I saw something today about Pope Leo blessing a block of ice for a climate justice event, and people seem upset. I don't totally understand why they're upset. You know, from my understanding as a newer Catholic, Pope's priests,
well, what have they said?
You know, they bless objects. Do what now?
What have people said? I'm not really familiar with this.
I've seen people say, you know, this is horrific was a word used, things like that.
Are these those anti-ice protests I've been hearing so much about?
Oh, yes, the people are protesting the ice. Yeah.
No, it was just a true block of ice, like something called Blessing the Waters.
I've seen the video, but and I've got the remarks in
but
front
I
of me.
I understand that people said it's horrific, but do you have any idea why they thought it was horrific? Like, what did they... This is like he's doing what?
I think they're more concerned with the people that are giving the event. I also saw the word communist thrown in there. Oh. But that's not the deep
communists,
part of my question. Is like,
just so you know, never blessed anything. They never, not a thing. They never blessed a thing. But all right, go ahead. Go ahead.
So
the deeper part of the question was like, to what extent, with all that being said, like people are upset, to what extent can the laity like object to the actions of those in authority without being in schism? Like I'm thinking of, you know, people who are upset about the repression of the Latin Mass and like other things, but Sorry, that's my puppy. But also that as well, just like anything that they're upset about, some things I see, I'm like, is that okay to say? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think a good principle in part is to have what's called filial obedience, to treat the people God has placed in authority over you the way that you would treat your father or your mother. And that doesn't mean you think that they're without fault. Even in terms of papal infallibility, the claim is not that the Pope is without personal fault. But it does hopefully present a context and a respect and everything else where if we're constantly complaining, if we're constantly critiquing, if we're constantly tearing down, and if we're doing so in a disrespectful and irreverent kind of manner, that actually is wrong to the honor that we owe, whether it's your father and mother, whether it's your bishop, whether it's the Pope, et cetera, that's where it becomes excessive. And I think we've lost any sense of there being a limit to that. That the call isn't everyone just shut up and pretend everything's okay all the time. That's not it. But it's also, you don't need to blast on Twitter your feelings about everything the Pope does or everything anyone does. So I would even say there's a broader culture of this that permeates things like politics, where we spend days debating irrelevant things and then we forget about the next week and then we start debating some new thing. And it's fun because anger is addictive and it tears our country apart politically. It tears our church apart into different factions. And it's easy to say, oh, it's the other people's fault. It's the other factions that are making it like this. It's like, no. If you're choosing to get upset about irrelevant things, you are the problem. You're not the only problem, but you are the problem. And so that's my thinking about all of this stuff. Like if you can actually show some through line where, yeah, this council said you're not allowed to bless ice, but now this Pope did, then fine. We can have that conversation. But if all it comes down to is, I feel like people from a different tribe would like this and I don't like them, that's not a spiritually mature way to approach this at all. So, you know, I mean, I think it's much better to say, okay, maybe that felt goofy to me. Maybe I thought some of that was weird. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe there's something I can learn from the Pope's remarks on this. And so, you know, he gave a talk that involves things like environmental care, talked about human ecology as well, or integral ecology, and the need to kind of approach this in a Christian way. And whatever you think of the particulars of climate change, I think there's huge swaths of that that everyone should be able to agree with, that, yeah, we are called to be stewards of creation. That is actually a religious principle laid out in literally the first book of the Bible, like page 2. So I wish people would have more of an attitude of what can I learn? What can I take from this? And not what will I do when I become Pope? Because the reality is, thanks be to God, random Twitter users are not going to become Pope. And God, I think in his providence, has spared us from that. So
we said, you know, no American would ever become Pope, and
that's
it happened.
That's true. Maybe it'll be
now
some,
you're saying no random Twitter
troll.
People.
Yeah.
You're right. You never know.
His Twitter handle is his papal name. Who knows?
Chelsea, what do you think of what Joe has said so far?
Yep, I love it. You know, me and my husband are ex-Protestants, so we're done being our own popes.
God bless you.
Definitely.
What a beautiful sentence. Yes, that's exactly right. Although I did see the video of the Pope blessing the block of ice, it's not really even a block of ice. It's a very mysterious piece of ice. I mean, I can see just having fun with it. I don't see anything wrong with that. If you can't have fun with things, but I don't know about it being, what was the word they used? Like a catastrophe or something?
Communist.
Yeah.
I mean, people got very upset when the Vatican had like Luce or whatever her name was, the little cartoon.
Yeah.
Chia, whatever. Yeah. So it turned out it didn't change the church dramatically one way or the other. We didn't have to have a big
right.
Well, thank you.
Right, we all survived. Yeah, we all survived Lucia, or Luce, or whatever her name was.
I can't believe I don't remember her name. I feel like I've betrayed her.
Chelsea, you want one of Joe's books?
Oh, definitely.
Did she say no? It sounded like she said no to me. I missed it.
I think she said
Oh, she's definitely okay. Because that was going to be awesome if she said no. I was going to be like, no, Joe, she said no. She doesn't want one of your books.
Yeah, the ice wouldn't be the only thing having a meltdown.
All right, we're going to give you, Joe wrote a history book that very few people know about. It's called The History, The Complete Collection of Communist Blessings. And we'd like to send that to you.
It turns out it's a very, very short book.
It's less than one page. The early church was the Catholic Church. It's coming to you, Chelsea. Hang on, we'll get an address from you. We'll be right back with more Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
She is one of the most beloved saints of all time. Honored as the saint of the little way.
Matthew Bunsen and the doctors of the church.
St. Thérèse of Lisieux entered the Carmelite convent of Lisieux in 1888 and survived only 9 more years. Still, her extraordinary holiness and prayer life prompted her superiors to have her write an autobiography, The Story of a Soul. It became a spiritual classic.
To find out more, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest.
If I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to share something from the YouTube over on the internet.
Okay.
During the breaks, I like to check and see what people are saying. And somebody, in response to the last thing I said about, you know, there was this Luce thing and, you know, I couldn't even remember her name and we didn't need to probably get worked up one way or the other, don't need to take on everything. But this person in the comments said, Luce helped to bring me back to the church. I thought it was so fun and cute, and I wanted to be part of it. And I find that to be really heartwarming and fascinating.
Yeah.
And you know what? If nothing else, it's probably a good reminder that sometimes it's the stuff we can feel a little snobby about, like we're a little better than it, that can really do some transformative work. Like there are people who are Christians today because some cheesy youth group or vacation Bible school or some guy in an ugly sweater shared the gospel with them. And
was that all about me? Or was it, were you referring to other people?
I know for sure. You led a youth group, but
yeah, that is right, Joe. And one of the, I mean, you know, you've been to the parish where you've looked into a room and the group was praying in some way or doing something, and you're like, man, it's not for me, but it doesn't mean it's not Catholic or it's not for somebody.
And I mean, those little gestures, I don't know, even just like people having fun being Catholic where they're carrying it lightly. We just had the Catholic Answers Conference. Chris Stefanik gave an amazing talk on the power of joy and how much the devil hates joy. And I think that in this world that is so focused on what is wrong and all of this, the more Christians radiate joy, the more the devil will quake in his boots because we're offering something the world doesn't have.
Praise God. Praise God. We're so lucky to have Joe Heschmeyer here. Chelsea, again, thanks for the call. Ignatius is in New York watching on YouTube. Ignatius, welcome.
Thank you. So my question for Joe, obviously you'll see a lot of times with State of Contest groups, they'll try to use, you know, words from St. Robert Bellarmine to kind of support this idea that, oh, the Pope can be a heretic and, you know, Second Vatican Council equals bad and heretical because St. Robert writes about the possibility of a heretical Pope, losing his office. Now, the way I understood St. Robert's writings here, and I wanted to, you know, kind of get your opinion because just to kind of make sure that I was understanding it right, it seems to me that he's not saying that the Pope can bind a person to heresy. That would seemingly, go against, you know, the entire faith in general. It seems more like what he's saying is that you know, in the same sense that you have latente or excommunicate, where a person can self-excommunicate themselves for speaking heresy, it seems like St. Robert is applying that to the papacy and saying that if the Pope ever said something that was formally heretical, he, like all members of the church, would just self-excommunicate themselves, and then the conclave would just make some sort of, you know, decision on that and then select a new pope. That's kind of how I interpreted St. Robert Bellarmine's words. Not that he's supporting, like, a proto-state of conscience stance, but I kind of wanted to check to see if that's kind of how you interpreted that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So a couple things. One, this idea that like a future church council could just depose a pope is part of a heresy called conciliarism. And the church faced this head on in the 15th century. And then more definitively, I think at the First Vatican Council. And so there is no ability to just say like, oh, I don't like what this pope said, so I'm going to appeal to, you know, a future council, you know, that someday this is going to be condemned by, you know, Vatican III or whatever else. Excurabilis by Pope Pius II in 1460, condemns this specifically. And he was someone who'd actually been in that camp of saying, because at the time he's growing up, there are multiple people claiming to be the Pope, and there's a huge confusion about it, and they're saying, we need a church council to settle this. So the first thing I say is, if your view of the papacy is the Pope could be a heretic and be deposed by a council, that is a condemned view. Don't hold that view. The second thing is, what is Bellarmine talking about then? Well, he's talking about a case that, like, if the Pope came out tomorrow and said, hey, guys, I've decided to become Mormon or Muslim or Methodist or some other M word, what would happen then? Well, obviously, he would cease to be the Pope. That wouldn't be binding the church to something, but it would be someone just formally defecting from the church. There, that's Bellarmine's personal view, by the way. A lot of theologians said, given the nature of the Holy Spirit's protection of the papal office, this could never happen. He's thinking of just like a worst case scenario. What if something like that did happen? People have interpreted it in a way that completely undermines the papacy. They've interpreted it to say, what if a papal teaching the church thinks is not heretical, secretly is heretical, and that means the Pope isn't really the Pope? But if you take that view, then papal authority goes right out the window, because it means the Pope only has authority if you agree with him. And guess what? The very places you need papal authority are the places you're not likely to follow the Pope on your own. So the state of a conscience reinterpretation is not faithful to Bellarmine and leads to a state of total anarchy, or at least Protestantism, where you follow your leader only as long as you want to follow him, and he can't bind you in conscience or anything like this. The whole point of papal infallibility is to get us past this, that we are actually able to believe, you know, these truths about the Trinity that many people thought were wrong, these truths about Christology that many people thought were wrong, these truths about the church that people thought were wrong, you know, all of those things, we can hold on to those truths precisely because the truth of the gospel and the truth of papal authority and church definitions of dogma and all of those don't hinge on whether they match up with our understanding of church teaching or our understanding of tradition or our understanding of the Bible. They don't hinge on that at all, because they're true, and we assent to that truth. We don't try to force that truth to assent to us.
Ignatius?
Yep.
All good?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let me just ask one quick follow-up, if I may.
Please. It's got to be quick, though. We have a minute.
Okay, yeah. I know with Pope Honorius I, you know, would that apply to him? Because I know he didn't bind the church to heresy.
That's right. So two things. One, he didn't commit formal heresy in the sense of some already defined bit of dogma. What he actually did was he was asked a confusing question and gave an answer that seemed right. And with the fuller context, he was actually siding with the wrong side. But I don't think it was clear to him or to anyone in the West what was going on in this controversy. So I think he unintentionally was sort of led into something of a trap situation. So there's two complaints. One is that he may have unwittingly agreed to something that was actually meant in a heretical way that he didn't read in a heretical way. And two is that he just didn't do enough to crack down on heresy during his pontificate. Those things are all possible. They don't make him stop being the Pope. So even if he should have done more, he's still the Pope. So that, I think, is actually a good sign for hope for us, that even if you don't agree with the job the Pope does sometimes, that doesn't mean he's not the Pope.
Ignatius, thanks again. Great call. Thanks to everybody who called and helped us talk about the hierarchy of this hour. I always feel like if you're talking about Robert Bellarmine, you're having a good day. The great Saint Robert Bellarmine, the great cardinal. If you're talking with Joe Heschmeyer, you're having a good day. So a double good day today. Joe, thank you very much. It was two really fun hours.
Well, the pleasure was mine.
I'm going to go watch that video of the block of ice getting blessed today.
All right.
And that will do it for us. We'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here at Catholic Answers Live.